Hello, Bulldogs. Thank you for tuning in to Who's Behind the Bulldog, Arvada High School's community interview podcast series. I'm your host and one of the assistant principals at Arvada, Jeremy Jensen. Each week, I'll sit down with someone from our Arvada community, be it staff, students, families, or other community members, to hear their stories. We'll discuss their histories, successes, challenges, learnings, future hopes and dreams, and much more. I hope you find some connections in their stories and hopefully are inspired to take some time to get to know them a bit better as our school year progresses. We have an amazing community here at Arvada, and I hope we can continue to strengthen that despite the challenges that await us in these unknown times.
Today's Bulldog is Roger Griffin. Roger is our Dean of Culture at Arvada and also teaches a remote section of Algebra 1 this year. In our conversation, Roger talks about his deep care for our students and how his belief that all students can learn shapes his approach to teaching. He discusses many of his learnings over his time at Arvada and how he's come to realize that we need to approach each situation differently and that the key to success is building trusting relationships with our students. He offers up some advice to help cope with the changes with remote learning and that we need to ground ourselves in growth over perfection as we navigate these tricky times. Thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode of Who's Behind the Bulldog with our Dean of Culture, Roger Griffin.
Roger Griffin, thank you so much for joining me today for Who is Behind the Bulldog.
You're very welcome. Pleasure to be here.
First question for you today. Tell the listeners about yourself and what brought you into education.
Well, I'm an East Coast boy. I was born in Charleston, South Carolina. Went to school. I was an athlete in high school, all-state quarterback for a football team, first baseman in baseball, and I wrestled. Joined the Army after after high school, and I became a military policeman. After I got out of the military, I became a carpenter. I started off being like a carpenter's helper, and throughout time, I worked my way up to a master carpenter and building custom homes down on Clearwater Beach in Florida. Spent most of my time on the East Coast, up and down the East Coast. Then I moved out to Colorado because my brother needed some help. And so I'm out here and I meet my wife, and she doesn't want me to be a carpenter. She wants me to have like a salary and, you know, not working because of, you know, the weather dictating whether or not I'm going to get a paycheck that day. So I went to college and chose to be a math teacher because it had to deal with all the construction and all the carpentry experience that I had. And 23 years later, here I am.
Feels like every time I talk with you, I find out about a new prior job or life that you had.
I've had a lot of them. Right after the military, I sold all kinds of things. I'm not afraid to have people say no to me. So it made me a pretty good salesman. Sold used cars. I've sold siding for houses. I guess my biggest one was door-to-door vacuum cleaner salesman. Full of crap, BS kind of thing, and not afraid to hear the word no.
Very necessary skills for a salesman. I think I can tell why you would be good at it. I feel like you are very personable and connect with people well, and I think it's hard to say no to people like with your personality.
I've been at all spectrums of the life. I've lived under a bridge, and now I live in a beautiful home, a custom home up in the mountains. So I can use empathy just about at any level.
Say a little bit about Arvada specifically. What was your path and journey to get here and stay here?
Well, I started my career teaching. After I got my license, I taught up in the mountains in my community where I live for 3 years at Clear Creek High School. And decided that I needed more money because Clear Creek just wasn't paying anything. So I looked in Jeffco and found a job here. A gentleman by the name of Ken Roepke was the principal when I interviewed here, and luckily he hired me. And I fell in love with the diversity of the school. I coached at that time as well. And I really liked the fact that I lived in the mountains, and like on a Sunday morning, if I went to the grocery store, I didn't run into parents and have like an impromptu parent-teacher conference on Sunday morning kind of thing. So it's nice that when I leave Arvada, I go up into the mountains and do my own thing. And if I want to stick around and be part of whatever's happening here at the time, I can.
What are some of the things that you're most proud of in your time at Arvada, both as a teacher, as a math teacher, and then as a dean more recently?
Well, I've started quite a few things. Night school. I was the one that created the North Arvada Night School, or North Area Night School. I also, construction in geometry class now, they've kind of changed, you know, mixed it up a little bit, but it's basically still the same class. I've seen so many kids graduate. I think one of the biggest highlights that I'm enjoying now is if I go out to dinner in this area, I run into ex-students that are like 30 plus years old, and they recognize me because I haven't changed that much, but they've changed dramatically. And I got to be honest with them. I tell them straight up, I don't remember who you are. I'm sorry. And I've had like thousands of students since I've been here, and I really enjoy seeing older ex-students of mine and how they're succeeding in life and material like that and how they're doing. Coaching. I've had some really good experiences coaching here. I've had a couple bad experiences coaching here, but you know, that kind of goes with the territory there.
What made you transition from classroom into your current role?
I thought that I wanted to help this school in a bigger capacity than just being stuck in my one math class. My classroom management skills are mine, and not everybody can do what I do, of course. I understand that. But I think that I've helped a lot of teachers with their classroom management because I can step outside. I can empathize with a lot of the kids that I deal with because I was a pain in the butt when I was in high school as well. So I understand some of their traits. And when they say, oh, how'd you catch me? And I'm like, well, because I've done that. I've forgotten how many times I've done what you just thought you created. So that's good. I truly love every one of the kids in this building. I think that they're all genuine and authentic in their own way. And I like to try to be able to reach into kids and help them understand that you got to be able to play the game to succeed. And a lot of these kids that I deal with, they just don't know how to play the game. They don't know how to, you know, back up and punt when they need to. And so they're just always on go, 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 go. And that's what gets a lot of them in trouble.
So what do you do to help support them to play the game a little bit better?
I keep an eye on them. I give them hints. We talk genuinely when we talk. My office is a safe sanctuary. Anything you say in my office is kind of like Las Vegas, unless it's a mandatory reporting thing. But I try to keep everything in my office and earn the trust of these kids that they can open up to me and let me know what's going on. I build enough trust with a lot of these kids where if a fight is going to happen, I have kids that will come up to me and tell me, hey, Mr. Griffin, the fight's going to happen. It's so-and-so place. So, you know, I show up there singing, why can't we all be friends? Or, you know, love is in the air or something like that to cool down the scene and not have a fight, right? We don't want to be fighting.
So what are some of your go-to strategies to bring learning to life for students? Like, how do you kind of bring the best out in the kids?
Most of the time when these kids are messing up, goofing off, or doing something that's not on focus, chances are I've done it. I've been in their shoes. So I've learned how to react differently than when I did react when I was young. And my experiences are pretty genuine. So I let them know. I'm not afraid to tell them, hey, I was a mess up. You know, I did a lot of these things, and here's what I saw beforehand, and here's what I learned from it, and here's how I acted beforehand. And now, because I've gotten older, I understand that I just can't blow up. And by the way, when I first got here, I was a hothead. I didn't really like to be told what to do or, you know, stuff like that. So I'd get pretty hot pretty quick with some of my peers. And as I've gotten older and as I've learned more with restorative practices and stuff like that, I learned to look inside my own self and kind of reflect on what I'm doing. And in my mind, I think of different alternative methods to get away from it. I'm certainly way more passive than I am aggressive now. And I try to tell the kids, being aggressive isn't the answer. It's step back and take a breath, analyze the situation before you blow up. And so I got a lot of experience with that. So I think the kids understand that I'm being real when I talk to them about that. And I think also that my peers understand that I used to be a totally different person than I am now, if you've known me for a long time.
What do you contribute to some of the shift in who you were back in the day versus who you are now?
Yeah, I just try to make everybody around me have a good time. And sometimes it got a little out of hand, but I'm learning now to be more politically correct.
Say more about restorative practices. You mentioned it. How do you see that impacting our school?
Oh, well, you know, I always thought that if I became a dean, on the wall behind me would be a big sandwich board with the infraction and what the consequence was. And no matter what, if that's what you did, that's what you got. I've learned in my time and with Andy from the district, I've learned that you can't be like that. Every situation has its own factors. You have to take in consideration the background, not of the student, of the situation. So not everything is a cookie cutter consequence anymore. And with today's, you know, society becoming more touchy-feely, hands-on, I guess, it's just the way you got to go. You can't be Bobby Knight and throw the chair across the basketball floor anymore. It's just not the way of today. So you got to be able to adapt and move forward.
From your perspective, how do you promote an equitable education for all of our learners at Arvada?
Well, I think equity comes with, in order to give equity, I think you've got to know the people that you're dealing with. I think you need to know their background knowledge. I think you need to get them to help you with that background knowledge and their cultural diversity and what they might experience compared to what a different person may experience. So as a math teacher, when I'm giving examples, I try to throw a couple different examples out there. And what I really like to do is for the students to come up with their own examples for the rest of the class. And one student may give a totally different example that the other student may never have even thought about because of their background knowledge, you know, and their background history and stuff like that. So I really want my students to create the equity in the classroom, and I just go with it. I think that every kid has the innate availabilities to learn. I get tired of seeing people and hearing people say, well, that high school is better than that high school and such and such. And I believe that all high schools are the same. It's how much a kid puts into their education, and everybody can get the same level of education. How much do you want?
So I'm kind of hearing like combination of some things, like you're naming like the relationships, you're naming like the student-centeredness, and also that belief that all students can be able to achieve and to be successful.
Those would be the bingo words. Yes. Yes.
Bingo. What did I win? So you're teaching some math remotely right now. What are some things you've learned work and don't work from the remote setting from your end?
Well, I'm still learning what works and doesn't work.
I don't know that.
I'm experimenting with different things as we go. It's the first time in my career that I'm teaching an Algebra 1 class, and I turn around and there's no one in the room. So the entire class is remote. And I'm a high energy teacher. I need energy back from my students, or else I'll go home exhausted every night and die. So this remote stuff it's proving difficult for me because of the equity thing again, where we're not, you know, we're not making the kids turn their cameras on or making the kids, you know, unmute. They can use the chat box if they don't feel, you know, comfortable. And I'm trying to build relationships with these kids via the virtual world. And it's just not the same as going up and down the aisles in the classroom and just leaning down next to Johnny and saying, hey, man, is there something I can do to help you get through this? What's going on? You know, you can't do that unless you go to a chat room. But then when I go to a chat room, I lose contact with the rest of the class. It's proving difficult. The beautiful thing about it is it's new. And I'm not afraid to make mistakes. I'm not afraid to say, oh, my God, I blew that one. Let's try something else. And I'm not afraid to show kids that I make mistakes. So, you know, even during the class, because I'm learning Echo and how to hyperlink and all of this stuff for this old dog, all of a sudden something doesn't work and I take full blame for it. I say, hey, and my class knows that I'm learning it as quickly as I can. Thank God I have Mr. Syme as a helper. He's certainly been worth his weight in platinum, way more than gold. I like it. It's a challenge, and I'm not afraid of challenges.
And that's exactly that mindset that we need to have in education now, especially, and always in math, right? Of like this growth mindset of like, all right, I'm going to make a mistake. The only way I'm going to get better is if I try something. Any plans?
I tell them I make the mistake on purpose and see if anybody's paying attention.
Oh, you got to. You got to call them out in that way. Play dumb. Like, oh, I didn't know that I had. Oh. Yeah, what do you mean? What are some things that you want to try? Like you said, you're still playing around with stuff. Do you have any ideas of like, hey, I really kind of want to try this year, see if this will.
Well, I ordered whiteboards for my entire class, and I was going to have them come in and pick them up. But it turned out that the whiteboards I ordered were on back order for so long that Staples just said, let's just cancel that order. So I've got to reorder those and see if I can't get the kids to come in and get those. I'd like to try the whiteboard so they don't have to, you know, they can just do their work and then there you go, Mr. Griffin, there it is, kind of thing. Or maybe we can take time in the class just to, I'll say one word and everybody writes the first word that comes to them, show it up. It doesn't always have to be about math, it's just relationship building. I'd like to try that. I thought that I was going to try to go and visit everybody at their house. But I'm kind of running into a time crunch when it comes to that. Other than that, you know, I have 44 kids in this class and only half of them are kind of really participating. So I've sent emails. I have people checking on them. And we've done a couple home visits, but it's difficult. You know, you got to keep your head up and just keep trying something else. Keep swimming forward kind of thing, as Dory would say.
Yeah, absolutely. You got to keep fighting the fight. Hoping
well, if I'm not going to fight the fight, I'm just going to hang it up. I'm not going to go home and pull my hair out every night and say, this doesn't work.
What do you consider to be your best failure?
Wow. That's a tough question. Best failure. Mm-hmm.
Do you think, you know, just thinking about those things, maybe that you're like, you know what, at the time you thought that they were, that was a big thing. I'm never going to recover from that, but it wound up being a blessing in disguise of like, you know what, I learned a pretty valuable life lesson in this and I'm walking away a different person.
It's hard to, you know, it's hard to come up with stuff like that right off the top of your head. Yeah, I guess my best failure I hate to say this, it sounds kind of bad, but my first marriage not succeeding.
Say more, why was that such a good failure for you?
Well, it opened my eyes to a different, you know, way of looking at relationships. It hurt my family, so I had to help heal that with my family. It took me a while to trust again, but eventually, you know, I met my wife that I have now, and she changed my whole thought process to being married. So I guess that's one of them. I'm sure I have others. I've failed a lot.
We all
here I am, right? I'm succeeding, and I wouldn't give up any of my failures for anything. Everything that I've failed with has just made me stronger, I think.
Yeah, makes us who we are, right? It's a big part of life. Is
unless you keep failing on the same thing.
That's a good point. Roger, what big advice do you have for other educators?
Yeah. Well, with these times, do the best you can. And, you know, when I first became a teacher, I thought I was going to save the world. Every kid I taught was going to know math. And they were going to love math by the time I got done with them. And over the years, you find out that you can't save everybody. But you, just the one or two kids that you save per year, that you see that sparkle in their eye when they understand a concept for the first time, makes it all worthwhile. Today's times with the COVID and all the virtual stuff and the remote learning and all of that, some people say it's good, some people say it's bad. I know a lot of people that are losing their minds, a lot of teachers that are losing their minds. Don't lose your minds. Try to just go home and turn it off and do the best you can the next day. The principal at Clear Creek High School, where my kid goes to school, told me straight up, we're not trying to be perfect this year. We're just trying to be adaptable. So many things are changing, and they change on a dime. So a lot of it's not planned, so you can't plan for it. You just got to be able to switch the light on and off and move forward. I don't go home and lose sleep over the fact that I'm not connecting with every one of my kids in my class. I just come back the next day and try harder to connect with them. Don't be going home and pulling your hair out. It's not worth it, especially in these times when you don't have control.
Roger, thank you so much for your time here today. It's been a pleasure talking with you. It's a pleasure working alongside of you. I'm honored to be able to work and learn from you on the strategies that you use to help build those relationships with kids, and just know that all of our kids do deserve, the opportunity to grow into themselves and to learn. And that's why I appreciate working with you, because I know that you really believe that and you care about our kids at that level and a very, very deeply.
I care about our kids like they're my own kids, every one of them. And I fully expect every one of them to be successful. Some way or another, we got to find a way for that to happen.
Yep. And like you said, we just keep trying.
That's it.
Thank you so much, Roger. It's been a pleasure talking with you today.
Pleasure talking to you, Jeremy. Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Thank you all for tuning into today's podcast. I want to encourage you to take a minute to reach out to today's guest and make a personal connection. Until next time, this has been Jeremy Jensen with Who's Behind the Bulldog.